Welcome to the Townships at 12 for 2025. I'm your host, Maureen Dillon Teasdale, and I will be with you for the next hour. In the first part of today's show, I will be talking with Gabrielle Chonkas Bryant. Gabrielle is a support advisor at the Sexual Violence Support Center at Bishop's University. I will also have some community event announcements and some music. We will start with a song called This House. It's by Dana Reed, and we will hear the interview with Gabrielle Chonkas Bryant right after the song. You're listening to The Cube 88.9 FM here in the Townships.
Just you and me. Can't stay in this tiny room no more. Locks on my heart, locks on the doors. I can barely breathe. Forget.
FM. We welcome today to the Townships at 12, Gabrielle Chonkas Bryant. She's a sexual violence support advisor for the newly Sexual Violence Support Center at Bishop's, and I believe it opened in December 4th?
Yeah, actually it was already open, but our new building and space was fully launched on December 4th.
Okay.
Officially launched, but we've been active on campus for a couple of years now, but in just a different location. And this year we started using our new space as of September 2024, but the final touches and having a new colleague start only came about at the end of November and start of December. And since it was the 12 days of action against gender-based violence in Canada, we took the same kind of week to launch and highlight that moment.
Could you start by telling us about the mission of the new Sexual Violence Support Center?
Yeah, so as a sexual violence response advisor, we're two in the center, and we kind of make sure that everything that the center does is in line with our mission. Basically, we're here to be a direct centralized point for anybody who needs to get support and or address matters linked to sexual or gender-based violence on campus. And we're here really to work for all of BU community. So we do offer services to students, staff, and faculty. So previously, there was one of my colleagues that was here a couple of years back, and it was only focused on students. And as of 2021, the role kind of expanded, and now we're for everybody in the BU community. So our role is really broad in a sense where we do take care of education and different initiatives for orientation week, but also ongoing through campus initiative and to people that are in residence or sports team and different things like that. But we also do, if somebody discloses acts of sexual violence or gender-based violence, we're here to support them and kind of go through all the options they have on campus and off campus. So we're really there to create space for them where they could vent and kind of process their needs and then offer options that they can explore and always have somebody with them if they want, which could be us or somebody else. But we're kind of there to highlight what are their rights and what are their needs and how these could be met. And we also offer our services in French and English. So oftentimes we do have to translate a lot because some services are accessible in French, but some are not in English. So we do a lot of back and forth in that way. We also just do emotional support. We don't do full-on therapy, but we do create space for people to process their emotions or their relationship or dynamics in their families or with their partners. So that's some of it. And then we obviously do talk about policies and help different departments or CPSAs or HR on how they can approach different situations or modify approaches to be more inclusive, let's say.
Okay. How does the center ensure accessibility for individuals from diverse backgrounds and experiences?
I think it's throughout action and how we cover trainings and things like that. So we do try to have an anti-oppressive approach generally, and we do have an intersectional approach when we talk about violence. So we know how people are differently impacted or held back by different realities. So by addressing it publicly or when we're doing intervention, it does create more sense of belonging or feeling that this service is for everyone. And then obviously over time, students, staff, or faculty will then share their experience with other members on campus. So we do have a lot of cross-referral people bringing people in and word of mouth in that sense. But we really try to have events or moments where we do meet people outside of crisis, but also have a space that is visible. We have one of our page on the website that's very clear about what the center looks like, who we are, and what we offer. So this kind of creates one less barrier of access in that sense. And we're two different advisors now. I was alone for a little period, but having two people also offers a chance for people to connect with somebody differently or to choose which advisor they
Now, are the services confidential, and how is privacy maintained?
So they are confidential in the sense where obviously people are coming here willingly. So that's the first thing, and they decide. And then we try to explain what are the different steps they could take and who would be involved in these different steps. And also we try to be clear of what would be shared or not shared and kind of follow these steps so they can have a better view of when their confidentiality is maintained or not. But we also have a non-directive approach in the sense where we do explain what are the potential outcomes, but if they don't want to do a formal complaint or they don't want to go to the police, that's a choice we will respect. So we try to navigate these things and information, and then we work on a need-to-know basis. So sometimes we can put in immediate measures and things like that on campus. While we don't necessarily describe to the person who needs to put the immediate measures in place why they're being requested, so then there's just the request and not the backstory that needs to be shared, let's say, with campus security or different people. So that's a way to maintain a level of confidentiality.
Okay. Now, what prompted the creation of this support center at the university? Was there a specific event or a growing demand?
So in 2019, the Quebec government mandated all post-secondary institutions in Quebec, CEGEP, and universities to get either a center or somebody who's designated with specific skills and background to address sexual violence on campuses. And then they kind of left a lot of openness for each institution to kind of spin it in their own way and address it in their own way. So that's why my colleague was hired in 2019 to address this topic. But over time, we saw that we have a unique opportunity with the size of our campus and our location to expand our services and address it in the way we're addressing it. So that's how it came about. And then the center also specifically in the hire of a second sexual violence response advisor came after the event that were publicized with the statement on the bridge in 2021. And there was an external report that was created by five different lawyers that evaluated different sphere of the university. And they submitted a bunch of recommendations of how we could better and push forward our services. And one of the recommendations was to have a standalone center in a separate location. And we had 2 years to achieve this. So the center was created right after the report, and I was hired as the second advisor. But then having the launch in December of this year was kind of the final touch to address the designated space for survivors to come. And these came from the CLISAR report that people can read on our website.
Okay. Now, how do you hope that this center will impact the university community in both the short and long term?
Well, I think it already has impacted it. The community, but I think this work is ongoing work, and we really focus on obviously what's happening on campus, but this work doesn't just stay within our campus and it goes outside. So specifically, some people that do seeker support are talking about events that happened when they were children or teens, or that don't pertain to their time at BU but may still impact their lives, or they still need support. So I think this doesn't just stay on campus because it addresses other things, but also we're building sort of conversations and moments and education that also can live outside and shifting maybe some of our perspective to go more on building a consent culture, which would shift how we approach sexuality, intimacy, consent in society and relationships. So I think these are all positive outcome we're working for, but this is a common effort, and we're just kind of a connecting part of the motion to shift our culture.
Definitely. Are there any plans to track or measure the effectiveness of this center in supporting survivors and raising awareness?
Well, we do track. We do offer statistics every year of how many people use our services and things like that. But since we started, obviously the services have changed so much that it's going to be nice with the new location and the two advisors that are stable to really see the growth with a stable kind of referral or point of reference. But every year we do still track. And I think we definitely saw a shift in people not only coming to us in full crisis mode, but also coming for education and coming for how do I deal with this situation if I'm a witness or if I'm experiencing this, or how can I be a more supportive partner or friend. So having conversations that are not only based in crisis response feels really good and positive, and we do see that piece. And I think sometimes it's hard to get feedback from people that do have user services because we do want to keep it confidential and they don't need to share their personal experience. But I think sometimes it would be nice to get some anonymous feedback that we could share publicly, because I do get people that thank us and talk about how the services help them, but sometimes it just stays in shadow. And it's a lot of shadow work and things that are not fully visible, but there's definitely a mark that's been done in the past couple of years on campus.
Mm-hmm. That's great. What initiatives are in place to promote a culture of consent and awareness on campus?
Well, I think the visibility of the center and our role as a sexual violence response advisor really brings a different type of awareness, and we're brought into different conversation to do education in different areas. So that helps. We do try to build a good partnership with the SRC, so our Student Representative Council, that manage the orientation week, but also different clubs and activities on campus. So to make sure that there's always ongoing training offered throughout the year, but also a highlight on orientation week and the arrival of new students. We also try to collaborate with the resident student services for who are most in contact with students who are living on campus or providing services to them in terms of mental health and physical health with the medical clinic. So we're trying to stay connected with the different types of services or areas on campus to make sure that it's a unified front and that everybody's on the same page and accessing support. So I think that usually is how it would.
Okay. Now, what advice would you give to someone who has experienced sexual violence but is hesitant to seek help?
I think it's really hard for us to say this is how it's going to look every time because we're really trying to tailor our services to the person in front of us. So come and have a space where you can talk as much as you want or as little as you want, and you'll have somebody who's going to believe you and be there to look at your options and just create space for you to be heard and explore your support. And it's general advising to start with. And then we will go in the path that feels best for you at this time in your life, but you're going to be in charge of the process. So making sure that they feel and that they know that we're going to follow their lead and their need, I think, is the way to go about. And just come and ask questions. That's the easiest way to get answers and to get clear answers for what are your needs.
Mm-hmm. Now, does the center offer resources for friends and family members of survivors who want to provide support?
So we really work on campus because it's already a big demand and there's resources outside. So we do still, even if you're a student or a staff or faculty, offer support or referral for external services, so not just with us, so external. And if we do have somebody actively on campus that seeks support or needs support, we do sometimes initiate conversation with family members or partner, but usually it's with somebody who's directly in the youth community, so not external. But then we did have sometimes somebody ask, so let's say my child experiences, so we do try to speak directly with the student or the person who's experienced the harm, but sometimes we can give referral to parents and say, this is a place where you could get support to be an ally or to support your family member. And sometimes, let's say, even we do initiate some conversation with family members and with their loved ones that we have with us. So sometimes it's easier to share stuff or to address issues and have somebody who's advocating for you or can redirect the conversation and things like that. So we do.
Now let's talk about challenges. What challenges do you anticipate the center might be facing and how are you preparing to address those?
I think a challenge in one that's not really at the same time is to have a lot of requests. So it's nice, it's positive, and I think sometimes it's a challenge because then people feel like we have a bigger issue on campus than on other campus. But I would just say I think it's more that we're building a lot of trust in our community, and then people are seeking support in different manners. So I think it's a challenge to have more demand and not necessarily more resource, but we really try to make sure that all the needs are addressed. And then with our stats and how it's going, we'll get more resources allocated to this. So that would be one challenge. I think the other challenge, obviously, there is some political movement in our public discourse. So we always have to deal with disinformation or mixed messages in the general media or on social media. And I think it's always a challenge to find the right words or appropriate words to bring up facts and actual solution instead of just going into fear mongering and figuring out what is the actual issues that are in need of being addressed in society and not just pushing on fear. And I think always an issue socially, I would say, is always to build a bit more accountability in our communities and just keeping the conversation flowing, education flowing, to make sure that we do push forward for more focused services, or even there's new projects for court that is more conscious of how sexual violence or gender-based violence do affect survivors. But I think going in that same direction is always a challenge, but always.
How can students, staff, or even community members get involved with and support the work of the center? And are there any peer support opportunities for those who want to contribute?
So we do some peer support. I do try to train some students and some community members sometimes to provide in co-facilitation workshops on active bystander and things like that. And we also try to connect with groups of student leaders on campus or, let's say, residence life assistants and people that are there for students and residents, so that there's other student leaders or other leaders on campus that are taking up some of the load. But I would say, just generally, there could be with the foundation direct donation that is given to support the mission of the center, and that is definitely always helpful. But just having the courage to pick up the phone or knock at our door and come and ask your questions directly, or then refer somebody directly to us. I think direct contact is always the best solution. That's always helpful when somebody's like, I actually have a question. Let me just go and see what can be done, and then we can assess properly. But usually we don't support if we're not connecting with people. So the more we do connect, the more needs are being addressed. So I think there's still a lot of taboo or stigma around seeking support and what support can look like and what it means to be a survivor, victim of sexual violence or gender-based violence. So I think taking that step is really important. And we're also, I think, in a moment where there's a lot of gender-based violence happening in Canada at large, so addressing it and not just solely focusing on sexual assault, which is important and for sure still a priority to address, but I think we need to understand the umbrella term of gender-based violence, sexual violence, and intimate partner violence, because they often overlap these three, and a lot of harm can come that don't always look like the stereotype that we see on media or that we expect.
Mm-hmm. Now, what inspired you to get involved in this work, and what keeps you motivated?
I think initially it was for me to be involved and create a culture shift. I was really interested all my life to do education work, public education, and shifting the culture in regards to consent and how we interact and how we build a relationship with people. So I think that's what drew me, and that's my focus. And then I think it's just being there, part of a solution. I think it's really gratifying, but also needed. If we want to see change, how are we enacting it ourselves? So that's really what motivated me. And as well, I'm a parent, so I think I want to create the world I want my kids to grow up in. And for me, consent is super important. So building a consent culture in my day-to-day practice, I think is highly motivated by the world I'm going to leave around me.
Mm-hmm. Great answer. If there's one message you'd like to share with the listeners about the importance of this center, what would it be?
That this conversation is happening on our campus, but it should happen in every sphere of our life, and that acts of violence are still happening, but we all have a role to play to create safer environments around us. And it's not because it's not told or not talked about that it doesn't happen. So let's talk about it, let's address it, and let's create a culture shift.
Okay. Anything else we left out, Gabrielle, that you'd like to add?
Yeah, I think it's the right time where we're all connecting with family or loved one or our community. So talk about these topics, subject, and how you can be there for each other and what you can do to make people feel safer. And yeah, I think engage in conversation, ask questions, listen to answer, and respect the answer. I think consent is a daily practice that you can do in every relationship. It doesn't only come in intimate partner relationship or linked to sexuality. So practicing your consent skills is a life skill that you can have in every moment. So I would take the time of all those gatherings and all those festivities to put it into action.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Gabrielle Chonkis Bryant. She's a sexual violence support advisor for the Sexual Violence Support Center at Bishop's University. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. Okay. Have a good day.
Bye. And next up, we have some community event announcements for you here on the Townships at 12. The Lennox for Youth Center will hold its first ever LYC Minis Pilot Program. For more information, please attend their Parent Information Night on January 24th at 6 p.m. They are located at 168 B Queen Street in Lennoxville, J1M 1J9. Registration forms will be available at the Parent Information Night to register your child for the program. Canada Reads and So Does Lennoxville 2025 edition coming up on Wednesday, March 12th at 7 p.m. at the Hope Community Church in person and via YouTube live stream. Local presenters, lively conversation and debate. The MC will be Stephanie Brown, and stay tuned, there'll be a lot more information coming soon. There will be a candlelight service at the Wales Home on January 30th from 7 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. in the main living room at the Wales Home. Candles are $10 apiece or buy 11 for $100. You can buy your candles at the Wales Home on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. at the reception, or you can go and buy them online. Go to www.waleshome.ca. Funds raised will be used to buy equipment for patient care. There will be music and light refreshments at the candlelight service on January 30th. Everyone is welcome. Mental Health Estuary will be hosting two free workshops, both presented by the returning guest speaker, Melissa Hindley, MACO psychotherapist. Done, Not Perfect, Trust Yourself, and End Procrastination. Tuesday, January 21st, 6:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m., learn strategies to overcome procrastination and build trust in yourself. The Power of Empathy, Developing Skills to Navigate Challenging Emotions. Wednesday, January 29th, 6:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. Deepen your understanding of empathy and enhance your emotional resilience. Both workshops are free and will take place online via Zoom, with sessions conducted in English. For more information or to register, participants can visit their Facebook or Instagram pages, that's Mental Health Estuary, or you can email them at outreach@mentalhealthestuary.com or give them a call, 819-565-2388. Lots of events coming up at the ANAF Unit 318, better known as The Hut. A brunch on Sunday, January 19th, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, presented by the Benevolent Committee. Stop in for a tasty brunch. It's $15 for adults and $7 for children. It's open to everybody. Membership Blitz, Sunday, January 19th, 1 to 4 p.m. Membership Committee will be holding a Membership Blitz for those who have not gotten their 2025 membership cards. Stop in to pay your dues and a chance to win your 2026 membership during the early bird. Unit Meeting, Wednesday, January 22nd at 7 p.m., open to members, your chance to find out all the things going on and have your say. Music Jam, Sunday, January 26th at 2 p.m. Come on over and listen to local musicians. Free admission, open to everybody 18 years and over. Volunteers, the canteen is still looking for anyone who can help for a few hours on Friday afternoon. No training needed. They will show you what needs to be done. Every hand helps. Contact Nina at nanars24@gmail.com. Township's Young Voices Art and Writing Competition. Township's Young Voices Contest, art, photography, poetry, fiction, nonfiction in English, open to youth ages 11 to 29 years old who reside in the Eastern Townships. $3,000 in prizes. The deadline is January 31st, 2025. Winners will be published in the Township Sun. This year's theme is What Interests You? Submissions should relate to some aspect of life in the Eastern Townships, past, present, or future. The contest is free to enter, and the deadline again is January 31st, 2025. Visit the Township Sun website or give them a call, 819-566-7424. Hugs is back. From November to March, Mental Health Estuary is accepting hugs, H-U-G-S, hats, underwear, gloves, socks, and scarves, and other warm items of clothing. These are then donated to local resources offering services to those experiencing homelessness. Monetary donations are also accepted through the website and by check. Please make checks payable to Mental Health Estuary and indicate HUGS Hugs on the memo line. Items can be dropped off directly at their office in the beige bins next to door number 2 at 3355 College Street in Sherbrooke. Alternately, an in-person appointment can be scheduled to drop off items or a check. For more information, 819-565-3777 or projects@mentalhealthestuary.com. And if you belong to a nonprofit organization, you have an event coming up, we would love to get the word out for free. Just please give me an email describing the event, cjmqnews@gmail.com or cjmqnews@yahoo.ca. I'd like to thank my guest in the first half hour today, Gabrielle Jonkis Bryant, Sexual Violence Support Advisor for the Sexual Violence Support Center at Bishop's University. We will take a break and hear the news with Derek Bullard, and we will be right back with part two of the Townships at 12. We will close the first half of today's show with Genevieve Reset, and the song is Northern Star, so please stay tuned.
Every time I close my eyes, time, the flame that never dies. Ah. And even when I cover my ears, there's a little voice I hear, far away but still so near. My friend, don't say goodbye. You're my constant shelter, a warm breeze that